You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good,
AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Breaking Bad After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Breaking Bad After Show.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Bing is for doing, and we are doing another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Breaking Bad, Season 5, Episode 14, Ozymandias. I'm John Comerford, and I'm joined by Ed Bowling.
That's me, Ed Bowling.
And Matt Lieberman.
Hey.
We also have Kristen Snyder.
Hello, hello.
And our very special guest star, you know him as Skinny Pete, the formidable Charles Baker. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good
to have you here. All right, so gentlemen, lady, the Hadjali fallout. I don't know where else to start other than to talk about Hank. And the fact that Gomi's gone, and
yeah.
Hank too. I have to say, the way Hank went, I was not happy about it. I was not happy about it. Didn't like it. I wanted a bigger ending for him. I put it to everybody on the panel.
Well, here's the thing, right? If you wanted the kind of, like, epic death moment and, like, the slow motion whatever,
no.
that would have come at the end of last episode. I thought it was fitting.
You were the one that said in last episode you knew he wasn't going to die. You wanted him to have a bigger death. You wanted to have him a rightful death, so to speak.
He said he didn't think that Hank should die in the beginning of the episode as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because or at least just immediately, like, it opens up on Hank's body falling
right.
back. Because that's weak sauce. That's not an earned
right.
death. I felt like Walt pleading for his death and, like, giving up the fact that he has $80 million buried in the desert in an attempt to preserve his family one last time, you know, and Hank just, like, telling him, you're the smartest man in the world, but you are an idiot because I'm going to die.
Yeah.
That, to me, was Hank to the very end.
Oh, that part, I'm not saying it wasn't true to his character. That was true to his character. I'm just saying, as a viewer, I was going, damn, I wanted a better death for him. That's all. I'm not saying it wasn't right or accurate.
I think it was a great death because he remained true to his character the entire time, even hearing everything that Walt said. Not for a minute did he flinch and was going to be, like, playing along with Walt like everybody else in this show has the entire season.
He's the one guy who never broke. Do you know what I mean? I mean, like, him, Walter Jr. and Holly, but, like, he never...
I don't know, I think he broke a little bit
when he
let Jesse just, who cares
true.
If he dies, he's just a...
Yep, Hank's desperation to get Walt caused him to extend over, push the limits a little bit, but you're all alone here, John, because
I think
his
anybody
death,
else? Anybody? What about you, Phil?
Sometimes less is more, man.
That's true.
Less is more. I think it had a bigger impact having it be as kind of minimalistic as it was.
Hank is a simple guy. He's simple. Everything is simple. And so that was just a simple way he looked death in the face and said, bring it.
Yeah.
It reminded me of 1 minute, which is actually my, other than this episode, my other favorite episode of all time, when it was sort of like Hank was reaching for the gun, just like we kind of got that callback with this episode and with the twins.
Yeah.
What, season 3 that was?
Yeah.
And I loved, I think it was 30 seconds it was called, the episode. And it was just like, it called back to that moment where he kind of escaped death that one time, and it was him, like, on the ground crawling for it once again, and I just felt like this was an amazing episode, and I couldn't see it any
other way. All right, Phil, what about you in the booth? Am I the only one hanging on the other side? You gonna leave me hanging out here alone?
I thought it was slightly weak.
What?
But,
Yeah. Look, I'll admit that it wasn't necessarily an epic end, but he was himself to the bitter end. When it happened, I just crumpled in my seat.
I thought the more interesting about it for me was that because of Hank's death, we even completely forgot about Gomi.
Gomi's death was unceremonious.
I know.
Nonsense.
But didn't you know? I mean, from last week's episode, you knew when the everything was blazing. You knew he was a goner anyway, right?
When he was out in the desert, you knew Gomi was a goner. It's just like, let him walk off the show with his team and become ASAC.
You know, it was a pretty big teaser that it was the third time that the gun got raised Hank's head that he got shot. So Vince Gilligan made us sit through two points of the gun. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the third one. You know, this dude, the guy, is he's not the type of guy. If his gun is out, he's going to use it.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff in the beginning where they're asking him, show us your badge. That was just all just, you know, distraction tactics. His plan was to kill everybody, just like Hank said.
So what's the ruse for then? Why distract? Who cares? What's he trying to do? Is he trying to get information? What?
Well, first of all, it worked, right?
To what?
Because he won that battle.
He was going to win it anyway. Like, he's already made his decision. Well, he's going to kill the guy anyway. So what battle is there?
The gun battle. Yeah. There was a little bit. He distracted. It was good. I thought it was good.
Well, no. Here's the thing, right? Walt keeps pleading with him. He doesn't want to alienate Walt. He still likes Walt. He's still technically business partners with Walt, you know, and he's trying to remain on an even keel with him. You know, their business had been concluded once Walt was dead Hank was dead and Jesse was taken.
But your argument that he wants to be on an even keel, why did he even go then if he wanted to? Why wouldn't he listen?
He wanted to preserve his investment.
I know, but I
just wanted to talk about one thing. Sorry. You brought up 1 minute, right?
Right.
And the contrast between Hank going for the gun in that episode and the way it was shot versus him going for the gun in this episode, mm-hmm. as he's just kind of pathetically, you know, he'll never get to it in time, the way that it's framed.
Sure.
Yeah. And he's just a goner from the moment that gun is raised. Like the decision was already made. He was never going to leave alive. And I think when you're compressing this much story mm-hmm. into so few episodes, at some point you kind of have to be a little bit mechanical in how you deal with this stuff. I mean, in this episode, think about the amount of reveals and scenes that mm-hmm. We got paid off in this episode. Mm-hmm. Some happened off camera because there just simply wasn't time. Mm-hmm. And I think they couldn't have prolonged Hank's death any further than they did.
I completely disagree. They
very
could absolutely,
effective.
And it could have been extremely dramatic to do so.
Dang. What is your dream death for Hank?
Well, yeah, what's the
John?
Dream death?
Well, we'll get into that in predictions, right. or but rather than predictions, it would be wishes.
So, okay.
But speaking of reveals, let's go the big reveal for Walt to Jesse.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
So because in the room as we were watching, everybody, I think with the exception of me, especially you, Ed, you're going, yeah, you were actually excited about
well,
it.
Well, I just said I knew it because I knew that it was, you know obviously Walt is the only one that could tell that one.
No, yeah, he's only the one that could tell that.
I originally expected it when he was in his emotional rant in the car driving to the desert. I expected him to sort of slip. But it just goes to show that he was really always in control. And this was, he completely decided to do it. Mm-hmm. He was fully manifested as Heisenberg at that point. He had seen Hank die. It was, you know, and he didn't forget that Jesse is the one that brought him there.
Yeah.
And he just said, you know what?
Yeah. Jesse is the one.
Yeah. Well, he's taken himself completely out of the picture blame-wise. Mm-hmm. If Jesse hadn't given him all that information, mm-hmm. if he hadn't betrayed him, Hank would still be alive. His whole thing has been about family, 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 and he failed in that mission, mm-hmm. and that completely evaporates what's left of Walter White.
But didn't we think, though, for a second when he saw Jesse under the car, that he was going to wait for them to leave and then somehow try to leave with Jesse?
Nope.
I did for a second. I mean, I wanted them to team back up again when I saw it, because honestly, you could see it in Jesse's eyes. He still is in disbelief of everything that's happening.
Oh, man,
he still sees
it
that it's like Team Walt and Jesse. And even when he saw Walt, he thought that Walt was possibly back to his level when he saw Walt down in the dirt crying. And that's when he decided to signal to him because he wanted to be there for him.
Good point.
And that's when...
Well, you think Jesse was signaling to him?
That's what I thought. I thought Jesse was signaling to Walt to be like, hey, I'm here. I didn't run away. I didn't leave you. Because he could have. I think for a minute we all thought
I didn't see a signal, but I agree with that. The symbolism of them both being down at the same level. Uh-huh. I like that. I like that idea.
Well, actually, that kind of ties into the title of the episode.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
So it's based. It's a poem by Percy Shelley. It's a very old poem. And Bryan Cranston released a video this week of him reading Ozymandias. And the opening lines: "I met a traveler from an antique land who said, 'Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal these words appear: My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. So we're in this desert, and the are once two strong pillars, Jesse and Walt, who were these partners holding up this empire, have now kind of crumbled, and they're just these stumps left in the dirt of all that's left of Walt's empire. And I feel like this whole episode is just kind of like looking out over the desolation of what was, you know, potentially a happy ending for him. He was getting away with it. He was out. And now it's all just like so much dust.
Yeah, like all the other.
Yeah.
But I just want to go back to the Jesse thing. So he's under the car, and you guys thought he was signaling. But
no,
did you have that feeling?
I didn't see a signal.
But
no.
But you okay? Because I didn't think for a second.
Okay, but he was in a hole under the car.
Absolutely,
he did not have to touch whatever it was—the part of the car that was shaking—to kind of get Walt's attention. I don't think he just suddenly like moved wrong and the car shook. Like he had been hiding there for a while. I felt like he was signaling to Walt.
Wow.
I don't know. I missed it. I thought I saw something under the car. I didn't realize it was Jesse until he told them. Yeah. That's all. Yeah. I it could very well have been a signal. But at that point, what's the point there? I don't think that he's trying to comfort him. If he's trying to tell him, I'm here, don't say anything.
Then what was it? Why do that?
Why
not just
call his attention?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't think for a second that he even wanted to be by Walt or with Walt.
Yeah, I don't think Jesse
hates Walt.
Yeah, he's done. He's done there.
You know what? I think he goes back and forth with it. And I mean, after this episode, obviously not. But I was defending Walt, and I feel like I was in Jesse's shoes defending Walt this entire time until this episode. And I now feel, obviously, that he... You can't. I don't have words to defend him anymore, but I feel like Jesse was still pulling for him slightly, hoping that there was something there.
I don't know.
I didn't see
anything. If he was still pulling for him, why get him...
He went back and
why
forth.
Why go to the cops? Why go to the DEA? Why almost get him arrested, finally?
He spit in the guy's face.
The guy's face. You were so excited.
10 minutes prior to this.
Just
so
hoping.
Much hatred.
I think he was just hoping that there was still Mr. White there.
It's another 3-1.
I feel like the whole time there was shock in his eyes, looking up at like his father, like saying, go ahead and kill my son. Like I thought that it was just pain and like disbelief the entire time.
Well, I think when they pulled him out of the car, when he realized that you're not going to let him kill me, are you? I mean, I know that we've had our differences.
Well, see,
he's not going to let him kill me.
Yeah. He hadn't actually seen it come out of Walt's mouth yet. He hadn't actually seen the nod to say, yes, it's okay, you can shoot him. And to me, it was completely genuine. There was no hesitation. There was no plan to save him at the last second, to say wait or whatever. He had gave the nod, and Jesse was gone right then. He was going to watch it.
Yeah. Can I ask the room a question?
Yes.
Okay. I personally was surprised at how frantic Walt was in his attempt to save Hank. I feel like at some point he would want to get out of this and, you know, get out of it permanently.
Well, I think it speaks to your point, which you just made, which is in not saving Hank, that was the last of Walt left.
Yeah.
And then he's completely gone. Maybe he, in his own subconscious way, recognizing that if I don't save him, there is no hope for me.
I think his ego somehow told him that he can still make this work. He can still keep his family together, and once we sweep this all under the rug, then we're all going to go back to having family barbecues.
Because his family's still intact until Hank's dead.
His wife's sister's husband, and that's going to be hard to sell to his wife. He's got hubris enough to think,
no, I can still make this work.
Right.
Well, the thing I was thinking was that when he was behind the rock, okay, and he was crying behind the rock, that was Walt. But the guy who came out from behind the rock was Heisenberg, and Heisenberg came with a plan. And he knew that, okay, I'm going to walk out here, I'm going to get arrested. I already called off my guys. And I'm going to be between now, the desert, and by the time I get to the police station, I'm going to be able to figure a way to get out of this thing. And so that was a way to get out without killing Hank. And so the fact that these guys came and they were going to kill him, that was just a problem. He had to resolve that. He's just frustrated. Let me get out of it without killing him.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he wanted to do. And then he still had a chance to salvage his family.
Right.
As long as Hank doesn't die.
Well, that would ring true because it's exactly the same tactic he took at home when he was trying to get Junior and Skylar to pack. Look, the priority here is this, and then we'll deal with all the other stuff later.
Which means never talk about it again.
All right, since we're headed that way, let's talk about the Marie Skylar summit. at the car wash.
Oh, God.
I'll be honest. I was hoping that that Walt was just going to walk in.
Yeah.
So was
I was like, oh, please. Not. It was more just to spite Marie.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to see the look on her face. When
a holier than thou kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, hey, guys.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know why. Still pulling for Walt sometimes. Yeah. And it's like, oh, that's despicable. And then the next scene, I'm like, yeah, Walt. Yeah, Walt. Why are you arguing with him, Skyler?
I think I was pulling more from Junior. I just didn't want him to know the full truth of it. Just because.
Yeah, it's going to ruin breakfast.
That's what I said.
Yeah, it's not going to be fun for him.
No, there's no more family breakfast. No. And like, one thing that I did not expect, though, was Marie to give Skylar another chance. Like, she's giving on the strictest of terms, right? But she's like, you know what? On some level, I think you're still my sister. He convinced
you
to do these
things.
Yeah, there's still hope for you.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to play by my rules, and then I'll let you have your family back.
Power-hungry people. They just want their that's what I think it is.
This thing with Marie coming in, walking into the, you know, I mean, it was
brave.
It was the thickest dramatic irony I've seen in years, where we know the truth and the character doesn't know. And it's just, we just are, I was heartbroken. I was so affected by her walking in and knowing that she's making a fool out of herself right now. Mm-hmm. She's going to walk in here all cocky and say, I'm going to give you a chance to come back and my husband just beat your husband.
Yeah.
And then Walt would walk right in.
Which would have been cool.
Yeah. Right.
I was thinking that too.
Cool. A little bit of shouting in front of the working right there. I was like, ooh.
That's what I wanted.
Walk in, look at Skylar and say, hi, honey.
Yeah. You know? Well, I wanted it to happen right before Skylar would say something to Junior. I was going, because you know he's not under arrest. And so that's what I was hoping. Oh, geez, second, please.
Yeah.
Walt Junior kind of saying, I got this, like taking over the business, the family business for a minute. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what he's going to say now that he learns the real family business.
Yeah.
I got this. I'll take care of this.
But the way Walt Jr. found out was another, like you said, an off-camera thing. Mm-hmm. Same way Jesse's recording was. You know, we got little bits and pieces later that showed that Jesse told Hank everything. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get to see this. But I don't think that that's necessarily something done because of time constraints. I think it's done because we all know the story.
Yeah,
well, I know.
You know, we all know.
But I had been looking forward for a few years now to the moment where Walt has to tell his son what happened and watch that kind of like come over.
Right, because that would have been much more tortured, don't you think?
Yeah. To like watch his kind of like face turn pale.
The whole time he's trying to avoid that moment.
Yeah.
And that would have been interesting. I don't think that's
not going to happen.
You can't take that away. I mean, that moment's already gone.
No, but he can still have the conversation where it's like an actual realization coming from his father. He's still not believing everything.
No, he's believing it. I mean, I think when he called the cops and he said, hey, all that other stuff.
Yeah, no, when he realized that Hank was dead.
Yeah.
You know, that Hank was dead and his dad was likely responsible and then fought his mom with the knife
and the whole thing.
And then started screaming. You know,
I don't think there's any way he can understand the past, you know, seasons that we've seen everything that's happened in this brief moment.
No, but I don't think the idea that you're going to go from you're going to tell your son a complete. Well, first of all, he has this one mentality, which is you're not a drug dealer. And now he's going to break all that open. That's already gone. That you can't get that back because his mom's already told him everything. So I just thought it would be much more interesting for the son to have to tell the father.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Hmm. But we didn't get that. So we got something else instead. So that was all right.
Yeah. No, it was still intense. And I loved that moment in the car between Skylar. Flynn and Skylar. Yeah. And he won't put his seatbelt on. She's like, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
He's like, really? You're gonna tell me that now?
I was waiting for a car wreck. Yeah. I'm still waiting for a car crash.
There'll be one.
I like the shot before with little Holly in the back of the car seat. I thought that was a nice little foreshadowing going on there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we've seen that shot before.
Oh, absolutely.
We've seen that shot plenty of times before. Mm-hmm. Man.
Oh my God.
So, okay, and everybody, I remember as we were watching the phone shot with the phone and the knife.
Yes.
Everybody loved that shot.
And we were like, phone or knife. And then when it was knife, we were like, yeah!
I knew it was going to be the knife because in the beginning, in the teaser that we got, it was the same shot of her on the phone. That was when she chose the phone.
Oh.
And it was the close-up of the knives were right beside her in the teaser. So I knew it was going to be the knife this time because she had chose the phone before.
Can we talk really quickly about the teaser?
Yes.
Okay, because we haven't talked about it.
You mean the phone call from Skylar?
Yeah, the phone call to Skylar. So it's their first cook, right? Mm-hmm. And we're getting this
going back to the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, this glimpse of who they were back at the very start.
Back in the nice days.
Yeah, like, and the color palette is like back to the old color palette. Absolutely. And Jesse's off dicking around with a stick in the background, right? And then, so Walt's preparing this lie.
Mm-hmm.
And
practicing it.
Practicing it. Yeah. It is the first lie of his meth career.
Yeah.
And he's practicing, he's figuring it out. And then he gets on the phone with Skylar, and it's even easier than he thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And then he gets off the phone, and there's this moment where this look crosses his face where he's like, huh, that was easy.
Yeah.
This isn't going to be so bad.
That wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
And, like, you see everything that has come since in that one moment for me of just, like, I could do this.
Yeah, I know, but it's interesting because that lie wasn't so hard. But there have been countless times where we've seen him lie to many people very easily, but every time with Skylar, it gets harder and harder.
You can always tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that lie, that first one's easy. That's why the second one's easy. Or you think it is, and then you have to keep all these lies straight.
The first thing that I noticed about that scene was actually something that, you know, the reality of it, that it was clearly recorded recently.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Jesse was a little heavier set. Yeah. He wasn't the young, skinny kid. Mm-hmm. And I could see that Walt was a wig. It was a good one, but I could still see that it was a wig.
It was a rug.
Well, it wasn't that good.
And how about the callback to the pizza on the roof? Her talking to him, like, ordering pizza.
Mm-hmm. They have special for the two fans. For one, and I might even pull one myself.
Now, I want to go back to the family fight at the house between Skylar, because everybody was screaming because we heard the baby crying, and then we're like, oh my God, the baby's going to get killed. Oh no, now Junior's going to get killed.
Yeah, somebody's falling on a knife.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then no one fell on the knife, but something far worse happened. Still pretty repugnant.
Yeah.
I never imagined in a million years that he would take Holly. That was like one thing that never occurred to me.
He had a very good reason to take Holly.
Okay, well, let's explore that.
He had a very good reason to take Holly. For all the Walt defenders out there, this was his absolute last chance to start fresh with his family. Holly doesn't understand anything.
Mm.
And he can take her away with his $11 million. And because he, in that living room, he saw with his eyes. That's why they showed it to me. That's why they showed him, you know, Junior and Skylar together like that. He could see, I lost him.
Yep.
And so he walked out and grabbed the only thing that he didn't lose yet, family-wise.
Well, that'd be interesting because he could start fresh until he heard her saying mama. And then,
he's not a real dad. He actually loves her, and he couldn't stand to see her set. And then he's pissed off because that's why he calls Skylar back and takes it all out at that moment, because his last family member, Skylar has the loyalty.
And that scene to me was like almost a perverse commentary on Skylar haters and like all of that negative feedback. If you remember Anna Gunn's op-ed piece.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like everything that every single commenter I feel like ever wrote about just like this bitch who gets in my way and whines and complains. Yeah. And like, well, don't do that. It's too dangerous. You're putting our family at risk. You are putting our family at risk. And I was like, I was with her for the entire thing, and I was just like, Walt, you monster, until she apologized, and I'm just like, don't apologize to him.
She was trying to work him. She realized he's crazy. That was Heisenberg that called Skylar. It wasn't Walt that called Skylar.
And he just wrote her alibi. Like, they were recording all of that.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think he was crying. Yeah. I don't think all of that was real.
No, she's faking so that, you know.
I think he was saying that for a number of reasons. I think he knew people were listening. Of course he knew they were listening.
I thought that was all hubris, but no, that makes a lot of sense. He's clearing her of any blame.
That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because he breaks the phone afterwards. Why else?
Well, because he doesn't want them to trace the call.
They always break phones.
I know, but
it can be called breaking phones instead of breaking bad.
Okay,
good point.
Like, remember how many phones Saul has.
Okay, guys, but just saying that also points to us, the audience, that he probably knew he was being listened to.
But hold on, right?
True.
Yeah. Why would Heisenberg want to clear Skylar of blame?
I disagree with that on that. I don't think it was Heisenberg.
I felt like that was Walt. If he's clearing her of blame, it's Walt. If it's hubris, it's Heisenberg. And I honestly, I honestly can't choose which one. I can't decide who it was, and maybe our listeners can give us a better idea if you hit us up in the YouTube comments and let us know.
Well, yeah, because he obviously gave Holly back.
Holly asking for Mama brought Walt back
from the dead. I think, yeah.
Made him go, oh.
Yeah. He started realizing the
And I also think we could write down the dialogue of the call and do connect the dots to Heisenberg, Walt, who's saying who, which line.
Just ping-ponging.
Yeah.
It was just...
Because I thought it was... Like, the way he was crying and stuff like that, I don't think it was all just venom. I think it was him knowing that I have to say these things to clear her, and this is not easy for me to say.
Well, you know, I didn't think of it that way.
Anybody?
So, you
anybody?
Know,
nobody?
I'm checked
no,
a little
agree
bit right
with
there.
You, absolutely.
But the thing is, the crying in the midst of it was Walt trying to peek through. It was just too intensely evil, the talk that he gave there. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, and it was her question saying, "Where's Holly? And tell me what happened to Hank." You know, of course, Skyler's got her strategy. She knows for sure that the cops are listening and all that. But it was, he decided at that moment to not absolve himself of Hank's murder, instead to use it as a threat. That is completely Heisenberg to be willing to do that.
Yeah, it is, but I still think he was white fanging her a little bit, too. Just forget, I'm like, out of here, I'm leaving, just forget it, because I got to get out of here.
I could see it that way, but I just, I don't know. There's so much venom in that speech.
Yes.
Like, the tears, to me, it's the dream dying. I don't think that's necessarily, like, Walt in any way... being apologetic or being like, this is my fault. Yeah. To me, that's just like, how could you take this from me?
Yeah.
I was so close. We could have had a new life together and you ruined it. To me, that's...
But with all that venom, with all that venom, and then he's going to give Holly back to her?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's hard. Well, how does that? Yeah. How do you square that?
Because Holly cried, that brought Walt back, and then the decision was made. Okay, my daughter's gonna
go
back.
No, but he'd already made the decision to take her to the fire department because he's right outside there.
He had already made it.
It's already done.
Yeah.
So
he's spewing all this venom because you guys think that he's Heisenberg, and I'm going, wait a minute, if he hates her that much, why is he giving their kid back?
Because he's got things to do, he says.
He's never
spoke he loves
to
his
her
daughter,
this way.
No, it's hard to be an evil villain and change diapers.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you very much, the voice of reason.
He's going to carry the M64 in one hand and the diaper bag in the other?
I get that part, but I don't think Heisenberg would give her the satisfaction. You guys, the way you're making Heisenberg out to be, he wouldn't do that.
You notice he didn't. He let her believe that she wasn't getting it back.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting her back.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that was his punishment to her.
Right.
But he knew he couldn't keep her, so he had to find that balance.
So that's the thing, right? No, I think Charles is onto this because he punished Skyler, but he would not punish Holly because Holly didn't betray
him.
Right.
Yeah.
Betrayal is what he can't stand.
Yeah.
And even Walter Jr. has now betrayed him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I agree with you on that. I'm not saying that. I just still don't think it's all a Heisenberg thing. I just don't. I think part of me, look, in order to keep his family, whatever's left of it, intact, he has to get out and try to absolve them of any responsibility so they don't all get incarcerated. He has to.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that.
Because otherwise, that whole dream, that dies too. Because everybody's screwed.
And what about when he's in the car and he's looking in the mirror and he sees himself and he just turns the mirror away?
Well, I think he turns the mirror away and he's looking at the graveyard where Hank's buried.
Yeah, he's seeing.
Maybe, or you could see it as he can't stand to look at the man in the mirror anymore.
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think for sure that what we saw was the graveyard.
Yeah, he was looking at the scene where Hank had just been killed and buried.
I think it's a reflection of both. I think it's looking
it
at himself, and I think
both.
It's then a reflection of, which I think he's both. I think he's both Walter and Heisenberg a lot at the same time, which is why we can't pick for sure, and we're both arguing back and forth, because I think he can be both at the same time.
But the question is he both anymore? Like, that's the thing, is like, was there... The tipping point in this episode, or one of many tipping points.
You could argue the whole thing that Heisenberg was there all the time and you needed to have this right circumstances for it to come forward.
Or that Heisenberg was like when he came back from the desert in the fugue state.
Right, and we're not all good, not all bad.
Yeah. We're probably...
Sorry, Matt.
You know what, it's probably he's phasing one out, and then in the middle of this, they both poke their heads up, and we're definitely in an unstable Walt Heisenberg area right now.
Yeah.
You know, definitely.
So, what do we think about his plan then? So he's going
to. What does he have to go do?
Well,
So he gets in the minivan.
He goes
off to, quote, Alaska, as Jesse should have, but didn't.
He's going to New Hampshire, we know.
I mean, I half expected that we weren't going to see the vacuum repairman, right?
Right.
But part of me was just like, after all the times he's been alluded to, get in the car, shut the door, and it would be Vince Gilligan behind the wheel. Like, how fitting would that be?
Say, yeah. Where to?
Yeah, I mean, but I guess that's kind of like a spike in the camera.
Before we go ahead.
Was that Holly's first words when she said mama?
First words we've heard her say, as far as we know.
So, yeah.
I mean, I don't think we've heard her say anything.
But I didn't dramatic. Know if that was her first words ever.
I don't know.
Probably was.
I don't know.
Probably
that's what
was.
I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible. But we don't know where he's going from here. The thing that this episode did is it filled in all the remaining holes pre-flash forward.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, we know where Jesse is. We didn't talk Jesse yet, so let's talk him. Jesse, obviously.
Yeah.
I think he's...
Chained.
Chained.
Still enslaved.
If Jesse dies, he'll get the ceremonious death that you wanted Hank to get. He'll get...
No,
that's
it won't
why,
be the same, because
that's
I
why
want
we
Hank
got
to have
teased
it.
Right there.
If Jesse dies... Well, but that's the thing, right? In giving Jesse up to the Aryan Brotherhood, I feel like Walt has kind of, like, gotten rid of a lot of the dramatic tension between the two of them, and now their standoff, if there is one, at the end of the series, looks nothing like I imagined it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so who was it who suggested a couple weeks ago that he was going to go rescue Jesse with that M64 machine
gun?
Was that you?
I think so.
Claim that one. I remember saying that.
I didn't go any farther with it because I didn't have any more. Yeah.
I dismissed it out of hand before, but now I'm kind of wondering if it has more weight.
Yeah, I certainly
I think he's more interested in rescuing his money from those guys.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it's like I saw like four dead rednecks walking. You know?
Yeah, that's true. They're taking his money.
Uh-huh. That's true.
Well, he also offered it to him, but they didn't take the deal. They shot Hank and took the money.
Right.
That's right.
And Jack is just like...
You could almost see him, like, right when he, you know, he shook his
hand.
Yeah, because right
we square. I need to know we're square. They're
that,
not square.
Yeah, well, we're not square.
Oh, we're not square.
He pissed off Heisenberg.
When Jack and the other pirates were in the desert, I just felt like, they were digging up the treasure, and he's eventually going to, you know, kill his other partners, pirates.
Yeah.
And I felt like Todd's prerogative was always to get another lab rat partner. I don't think that he ever really cared about what Jesse told the police. Mm-hmm. I just feel like he was thinking further ahead than that, just like
he wants
would.
To be a good cook.
Yeah, all of a sudden, Todd's a smart dude who's like, I can manipulate and I can get what I want. I can't, you know, now he's all of a sudden, you know, a brainiac. Yeah. Right, you know.
He's smart enough to work his uncle. Let me know that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's all he had to do.
And the best was Jack not wanting to kill Todd's superhero, right? Not wanting to kill Walter White because that's kind of like Santa Claus to Todd.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he basically is. Mm-hmm. And he's he was Santa Claus anyway. If we look back to that photo,
that's right. Yes, that's right.
Did any of you see that meme this week? That was like it was like a two shot. It was like a shot of Jesse's face. And then a shot of the photo, and it's like, oh my god, Mr. White is Santa Claus.
I saw that, but I heard it in. Remember when they were just in 4 days out in the RV, and he was like, a robot?
Yeah,
that was the voice that I heard. Oh my god, Mr. Walt Santa Claus? Yeah, you know, it seemed more Jesse like.
Yeah.
All right, so let's quickly wrap up the Jesse thing. So he's now enslaved as a cook.
Yeah.
Short order.
His life is just so miserable, man. I mean, he gets beat up. He's so terrified of Todd, and Todd just wordlessly takes him out of the snake pit, you know? And
reminiscent of the spider in the cage to me.
Yeah.
He's playing with his little spider in the cage.
But here's the thing, right?
Spider in the mason jar.
Why wouldn't Jesse just sabotage a cook and blow them to kingdom come?
I think that very well could be.
It's a good prediction.
But here's the thing. I don't think that he does. I think that on some level, Jesse still wants to live, which is kind of shocking considering like how little hope he has. Although,
he's just learned about revenge. Jane too, so may say, you know what, screw it. That's it. I'm taking people with me. I'm blowing this thing up.
Well,
he's
I don't
just
know.
Learned about Jane.
He's got that motivation, knowing that they know about Andrea and Brock. Mm-hmm. That picture hanging up.
Yeah.
So that will be
him.
His motivation to get out. Maybe he blows up Todd, but I think he gets out.
Honestly, I think as shocking as the news about Jane was to him, it's going to provide some sort of relief to him as well. Okay, because remember, he blamed himself, all that stuff. And now
he can turn all that self-hatred onto Walt.
Yeah. I mean, he really can.
Yeah, and you have to remember, like, when he was cooking down in Mexico, when Jesse is self-actualized, when he's his, like, his most optimum self, he's capable of a hell of a lot. Mm-hmm. The guy has more, should give himself more credit. He's capable of way more than he thinks he is. And if he drops that self-hatred and commits himself 100% to vengeance,
Saul thought effective. He was on a killing spree two episodes ago.
Yeah.
And so maybe,
that's true.
Maybe that happens.
Well, and don't forget, we have to ask the question of why is there cooking still going on? Because those guys just got $80 million or 70 now, right?
So, yeah.
And I think that the only his uncle doesn't even know about it. That Todd wants to be a cook for his, you know, Daddy Walter White, Heisenberg. Wow. He's got some pride. He wants to. Why else? Who's making him cook? Nobody.
The Czech Republic. The Czech Republic with all their scary Czech guns. I'm just saying, they're committed to bringing the blue meth to the Czech Republic. They can't just stop.
With $80 million, they can.
That's his argument, $80 million.
If they'd gotten out of Dodge, but they're still there.
That's his point.
Oh,
why?
You're saying,
why? They don't.
My question is why, and I think it's just, I think that.
You got your FU money, you can just go.
I think the uncle and his crew are gone.
But here's the thing, right?
And they told Todd, blow it all up, kill Jesse, and let's get out of here.
Walt made that $80 million in what, 3 months? He made that $80 million in like 3 months. That's all I'm saying. It's the same reason that Jack wouldn't just take his money to kill Pinkman, and he wanted one more cook. The amount of money that is capable to be made from a steady stream of the blue meth, he was talking about all those greedy people, I know, so like maybe Jack isn't as greedy as the rest
of them. He's not an empire guy. Walt wants an empire. This guy, $80 million, I'll never spend that in the rest of my life.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Todd has never wanted the money.
I know somebody who does know a lot about drugs. We should talk to Skinny Pete and find out what Skinny Pete can say about
I know a lot about the candy we had to do mess with on the show. Actual drugs.
How is the candy? By the way, it is candy, right?
Yeah, it's made by cotton candy flavor or raspberry. I think it was kind of a mixture. Depending.
Made by Debbie Ball.
That's what
our research says. Debbie Ball in Albuquerque makes it. So it is cotton candy, though.
Yeah, well, it was either cotton candy or raspberry. I think they kind of mix. It was just the blue flavored one. So
nice.
Pretty awesome.
Well, let's just start off with the macro. What was your experience like? You know, working on it for so long, and how have you enjoyed it?
It was a dream.
Yeah.
I've been just bit parts in just a few TV shows prior to Breaking Bad, and and I even started on it as a day player,
right?
A skinny stoner.
That's really
yeah,
yeah.
And it was just like three lines, and then I was supposed to be done, and. I wanted so bad for it to be more than that, and it did. And I was like, "Ooh, oh, wow!" And every episode, I mean, I was done after my second episode, and they were like, "Well, if we need you again, we might call you." Uh-huh. And then I did another episode, and it just kept going. And they even told me, it's like if you hadn't have gotten on when you did the way you did, you wouldn't even had a chance to audition for this, because this role is way above your pay grade right now.
Wow.
Like, oh, cool.
Well, what's that story? How did that happen then? How did you get on in the beginning?
Well, in season one, Jesse was supposed to die.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get that.
So since Jesse didn't die...
He needed to have friends.
He needed to have friends.
Absolutely.
And so it was well, since we already brought this guy in...
Oh, we need to flesh his character out. He's got to have some friends.
What really happened was, for me, the way I got saved in was Matt Jones, Badger, was hired to play, to do the intros for Tuco.
Okay.
Originally.
Sure.
Okay. He was hired for three episodes, I think, in his original contract. Mm-hmm. And he was supposed to just, do the scene where we introduce him and cooks with Jesse. And then he was going to be the one to introduce. Well, after they finished his episode, they went, he's a little too funny and likable and not really, tough enough. Uh-huh. To be someone who's done prison time. He doesn't look like he's done hard time with – guy named Tuco and lived.
Right, okay.
And so they were like at a last minute kind of, well, we need to either do another audition or bring somebody, who do we got? And Vince Gilligan, or Bryan Cranston tells me this story, he said, Vince Gilligan, well, let's bring back that skinny stoner guy.
Really?
And so that's...
And that's how Skinny Pete and Badgie became buddies.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was, they bring me back to do the intros. Mm-hmm. And luckily, they just kept kind of going, let's see, he needs some cronies, so...
That actually is one of my favorite scenes, is when Skinny Pete and Jesse walk up to the entryway, and you know the thugs give you guys a hard time, and you look at him and you go, I'm Skinny Pete.
No. Yeah.
That's who I am.
I inside I was like just like giddy because that. Yeah. It was, even the script said, skinny stoner, yo man, I'm Skinny Pete. That was,
that's when you
I was
that
skinny
on that
stoner
script.
Until I said, yo man, I'm Skinny Pete.
Yeah. Wow.
And suddenly I'm, and that was like, for me, that was, okay, now I'm on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a character.
I got a name.
Yeah. You're in the world,
I'm not third stoner from the left anymore. You know?
That's great. I got a question because we've heard and done a lot of research and other people have told us that every yo, every bitch, all that is in every script. Now, but between you and Badger, is all that written or is any of that? It is all written. Yeah. So it's not all you guys just goofing around.
I'll get permission and I will ask permission because you really kind of have to to switch. You know, if it's, yo, man, I'm going over here. And I want to go, I'm going over here, yo. I would go, hey, can I, you know, switch that around? And they were like, yeah, that works, you know. But, yeah, we did them verbatim. And it was almost like Shakespeare. It was just, it rolled off
rather
your tongue.
Rhythmic, isn't it?
Yeah. Iambic. It was rarely wrong. I mean, it always just felt right the way they wrote it. And so.
Wow. And I had those scenes with the three of you, Aaron Paul and Matt Jones and you, those look like you're having a ball playing them. Were they fun?
They are. They're
not
the
a lot of hard
fun.
Nights.
No, there's some of them got a little long, but they are the most fun to do because Matt Jones is a comedian.
Yes, he is.
He's hilarious. If you've never heard his Tina Turner impersonation,
all right, I guess we'll have to look that up.
Hear him doing "Proud Mary." Uh-huh. We went to karaoke one night. Uh-huh. I was like, oh,
that's good.
Wow!
But he does a improvisational musical in LA.
Yeah, opening. Night at I.O.
Night the Musical.
He's very funny and a very nice
guy.
Oh my
God, that's a brilliant show.
Yeah, and he does a great two-man show on Thursday nights with Dave Hill.
Yeah. He's hilarious, and then Aaron Paul's just Aaron Paul. I mean, he's such a huggable, lovable dude. Okay. And I'm like a baby in this business. And so I was just in awe every day.
So, and you've been on quite a few TV shows. I mean, so what's their environment like? Is it really cool? It's relaxed? It's easy? Yeah. What is it like there?
We're like family. It was like they were working.
Every time
vacation.
You come back, hey, how you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. You walk onto the set and Bryan Cranston sees you and runs up and gives you a hug. Okay. And that's, I mean, every time. And asks about my kids. And asks,
great.
You know, how's the family? And remembers their names. I mean, everybody there, I don't think very many people actually left once they started working on the show. And so it was every time I went back, it was just like a family reunion.
And it must be because you're way out there. I mean, imagine that's it helps that, right? Because you're kind of isolated in a sense. I mean, you are a community family there because...
Right.
It's you're nobody
just you guys
but the neighborhoods are great. I mean, the city's been great to you guys, right?
Albuquerque was wonderful.
You get recognized all the time in Albuquerque now?
I never get recognized anywhere.
So you look a lot different than Skinny Pete, by the way.
You're like you've got these glasses, your hair's adjusted,
toned for a change.
There's
you don't have the hat,
no beanie,
you don't look like a method.
We don't even see Skinny Pete's hair in the show, do we? Ever see his hair?
No. In the thing.
My hat has fallen off in a scene, and they're like, cut, we gotta get the hat back on.
Do you need the hat to be in character?
Pretty much. It does help. I mean, I really admire Charlie Chaplin, and that was one of the things that I noticed when I was doing theater.
I heard you did mime, too.
Yeah, well, I studied mime mostly so I could do it in film. I really want to be in one of those CGI movies. But I noticed that the costume really just kind of made the character. And, you know, I could put on the costume and it's like suddenly I'm boom.
You're there.
Did you at any point kind of come up with a history for yourself of Skinny Pete, like where he came from or like how long he's been on drugs?
Or did they give you a Bible at all?
No, we never had a Bible for any of the characters.
Nothing, really? Wow, you're just making it up.
Because they made it up as they went along.
Okay, yeah, right? Just checking.
Skinny Stoner, Skinny Pete.
Skinny Stoner, Skinny. Yeah. You know, I understood a little bit about what they wanted out of a Skinny Stoner.
Right.
And I came back and you're like, okay, Skinny Pete. And, you know, of course you're a meth head and you've done prison. And I went, whoa.
Yeah, what?
Oh, okay. And I tried to come up with a backstory, and then I'd go up for my next episode, and everything they'd have me do would completely wipe it out. You know, it's like, okay, never mind.
So your improv worked.
Yeah, and it was such a great, you know, every time I got a script, I'd check, see, am I dying? No, I'm not dying. Cool. Then now let's
you
see
would
what
read
else.
Ahead.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that was the first thing I checked, because that was my job. It's the only job I had, and it's the best job you could want.
So studying like how a mime moves, that kind of like helps you also, you know, do the character as well, right? Because obviously Skinny Pete doesn't move like maybe Walter White does, standing straight up in strict form.
It's all about physicality. And the guy I studied with, his name is Johnny Simons, and he's at the Hip Pocket Theater. Brent Spiner studied under him. Mm-hmm. I believe Dennis Quaid studied under him.
Mm-hmm.
He taught at Duke University before he came to Texas, and he was the choreographer for one of the main theaters in Fort Worth, Texas, and then started his own theater, the Hip Pocket. And they actually did a lot of commedia, which is a 16th, 17th century Italian form of
the mask
theater.
Work.
Yeah, a lot of the mask work. Really like your Harlequin jester kind of characters. Mm-hmm. But they would also incorporate that style into modern plays a lot of times. But like I said, I studied from him. He studied from Marcel Marceau.
Who?
Yeah, that one guy. He's really one of the best mimes in the world right now. But he doesn't like to perform. He likes to teach. And he teaches by doing.
Mm-hmm.
You go to his theater and you work. And you work hard for very little money. And if you're lucky, every now and then he'll stop and give you a beautiful lesson in, stillness or...
This is more kind of thing. All right, well, we got a high sign, so we got to move on. But I want to ask a couple other things before we go. Favorite time, favorite moment, favorite thing on the show whether it's on camera or not.
Oh, God, there's so many.
Well, just pick two or three.
The time Jonathan Banks threatened to punch me in the heart was actually really endearing.
It was endearing?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, for me, it was sweet knowing he's so scary and intimidating. Uh-huh. Everything he's ever done, he's been that way. Mm-hmm. And just like seeing him on set I was starstruck.
Right.
We were sitting together and he said, "Hey, I'm really tired. It's our first scene. It's our last scene today. If you screw this up, I'm going to punch you in the heart."
Wow. Okay.
Okay. And I assume you went well.
Oh, like I said, I've been kind of auditioning every episode. I worked really hard at not screwing up.
Yeah. Well, your auditions are doing
bloopers.
Well, because they keep bringing you back. So.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You won't find bloopers of me. You won't find me trying to goof around. I was just like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir.
All right. Well, he sets a high bar for sure.
Yeah.
Everybody even said, I think even Dean Norris said that about him.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
So, let's talk a little bit about Blacklist.
Blacklist. Yeah. Oh, that's going to be a cool show.
Yeah. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it stars James Spader.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking
need
about...
Need anything else,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, he's a... he plays a psycho.
Yeah. He was FBI's most wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And for reasons only known to him, he decides to turn himself in to the FBI. And with him, he has this blacklist. And it's the list of criminals that are above the people that are on their most wanted list. These are like the people that they don't even know about. They're so bad.
Here's who you should really be.
And he's just going to help them catch them.
For his own reasons.
For his own reasons. But he's only chosen this one rookie.
Right.
This one rookie agent to be the only person he will talk to. And she's played by Megan Boone, who's just gorgeous. Wow.
How was that experience being on that show as a completely different environment?
Totally different.
Yeah,
totally different show. It's in New York.
Yeah.
Shoots in New York, which, you know, I just moved to LA from Fort Worth, Texas in February.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first job I got when I moved to LA shoots in New York. it was weird. I wear a suit.
Whoa.
Whoa.
I use very large words. And
no yo's? No yo's?
I never say yo, which has been a fight, you know. trying to say these, kind of high espionage kind of...
Well, this must be a blast, then. Yeah, totally different. Look at the range you're showing.
What's your character? Who are you playing?
Well, my character's name is Gray. Mm-hmm. He was originally the man in the gray flannel suit.
Ooh.
And,
so Skinny Stoner went to Skinny Pete, and Gray Flannel Suit went to Gray.
Yeah,
nice.
Gray. Yeah. Red is James Spader's character. Mm-hmm. I am Gray.
Gray.
Oh.
Gray and Red go great together. it's not a buddy comedy or anything. if he were Batman... I'd be Alfred. I drive his Bentley. Mm-hmm. I'm his liaison. I'm his confidant. Mm-hmm. And nobody knows about me except him.
Yeah, you're quite an enigma yourself in this, right?
Yes, and I love it. It's the smoking man from the X-Files kind of
character.
Nice,
right on.
You had me at Batman.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Great. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I know you can't give us any spoilers, but let's give us a spoiler for what's happening in the next two episodes of Breaking Bad.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, she was surprised.
They wouldn't give me the entire scripts.
Yeah.
For once it got to this point, you'd get a sheet with just your lines and everything else. It was like
redacted,
getting an NSA memo, everything redacted. And then on set, I think the crew worked really hard at kind of screwing with anybody who wasn't involved in the end. They kept making up different endings, And it's like, Jane comes back and kills everybody and, just trying to,
Jane comes back.
Throw us off the hook. And I think
we see Skinny Pete again?
You might.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. We're going to leave it there. Let's leave it there because we got to move on to news and gossip and get our predictions. Thank you so much. We're going to let everybody know where they can find you and Twitter handles and all that stuff at the end. So, but let's go on to news while we can, Phil.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Okay, lots of news. We'll try to get through it as quickly as we can. Breaking Bad has turned Albuquerque into a tourist hotspot. Before the show, everyone who traveled to New Mexico took a left at Albuquerque, obviously, and went to Santa Fe. These days, fans flock to Albuquerque, so much so that American Airlines and JetBlue have started their own direct air flights from Chicago and New York just because fans want to go to Albuquerque.
Wow.
And the Albuquerque Convention and Visitors Bureau website gets so much Breaking Bad traffic, they have their own portal. The show has its own portal. Local businesses have seen profits skyrocket. Debbie Ball, who is the owner of the Candy Lady and the creator of the crystal meth who used for the show the first two seasons, sells baggies of blue-dyed rock sugar. And she can thank Bryan Cranston for giving some to David Letterman on his show once. She sells up to 5,000 bags a week at a buck a pop. In addition, 300 Breaking Bad t-shirts, a Breaking Bad limo tour, and about 20-30% of her sales are Breaking Bad related. There's also the Albuquerque Trolley Company's three-hour tour. It's called the Bad Tour. Takes fans to locations featured in the show, including Jesse's house, the car wash, Crossroads Market. Marble Brewery created two special beers, the Walt's White Lie, and there's also Heisenberg's Dark. So we got
those are good, by the way. Just saying.
They both sold out within 4 days of their debut, so they're gone. So, and the Rebel Donut, they launched the Breaking Bad Blue Sky Donut, and sales beat out Valentine's Day, which is their most profitable day. And we even got Great Face and Body, a day spa launched Bathing Bad Bath Salts.
Oh, God.
Sold 12 bags of meth before they even actually had ever made any bags. So they currently sell about 3,000 bags a month at $16 a bag. It's $48,000 a month.
Jesus.
On Bathing Bad Bath Salts. So there you go. So I don't know what Albuquerque is going to do when the
really want to sell
done.
Bath salts connected to drugs?
I don't know. Like, I'm just saying. Okay, so the odds makers have weighed in on this. Who's going to live and who's going to die? We got the odds makers weighing in on this. Walter White. Is he going to live? Yes. He's 1-2. No. He's 3-2. So that's where the odds are on him. Jesse Pinkman. Not looking good. Yes. 2-3. No. What is that? He's even money on the no. No. 11-10. Excuse me. 11-10. Skyler looks like she'll probably live. Hank. Well, we already know that. Saul Goodman. It looks like, basically, it looks like Salt may live, according to the odds.
He'll live.
So we don't know who's going to win.
Well, a new show is a prequel.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
So we don't know if that could be it. Let's see. What else do we have? Any other news from everybody else? Do we have
now Jimmy Fallon premiered.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, please talk about that.
An extended parody called "Joking Bad" earlier this week or early last week, and it's very funny. It's packed with celebrity cameos, and it's really rich with details. You can spy Hank and Walt and Jesse are all on there. There's a moment where Bryan Cranston throws a pizza that is just so funny. But definitely check it out. It's on YouTube. It's on their website. It's very, very funny, as their parodies usually are at late night.
And a very unassuming chemistry professor at the University of Oklahoma, Donna Nelson, is getting a lot of traffic, shall we say, to her in some sense, because she's their scientific consultant. She's the one that gives them all the language and the lingo. Whenever Walt has to describe what he's doing or how he's doing it, she's the one that helped them figure out the recipe and how to show it without actually showing it. It's actually coordinated with the DEA so that they make sure you can't ever really get how to make the stuff. Mm-hmm. But they use this university professor, and I just thought she's very unassuming. Donna Nelson, like Ozzy and Harriet Nelson kind of look. Yeah, and she's the one. And by the way, she's also their go-to person for any bomb they have to make on the show.
Wow.
So, University professor in Oklahoma.
Her classes are probably packed.
That's it.
I just hope she doesn't get kidnapped and used for something nefarious. Right.
She'll get chained to Jesse. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, all right, I guess that takes care of our news and gossip. Let's move into predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
Go ahead, anybody. Jump right in.
I like how Saul had that line that we got in the previews, and he was like, how much time do you have left, asking Walt. And what I'm wondering is that how much time do you have left, you know, luck-wise or health-wise?
I think it's health-wise. Health-wise. I think it's health-wise.
I think that you guys don't jump on me all at once.
No, okay, here it comes.
I think that Jesse lives happily ever after, with his girl and Brock. I think that he kills Walt.
Ooh.
At the end, I think he creeps in the back door or whatever, and just with no words, no nothing, just pops.
Okay.
Oh, I don't want
After, by the way, because they only have two shows to deal with Chile.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They've
I'm
got
worried.
Chile and the Czech Republic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of worried.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want them all wrapped up, right?
I really need, because I was paying attention when Gus's head was at the pool.
Yeah.
You know, the only reason, if the cartel is scared of Chile, who the hell and what the hell is going to happen?
That's what I'm saying. And it's the one thing that has not been mentioned all season.
At all.
And of course, it's going to come back, and then everyone's going to be like, what? And then they're going to be like, oh, yeah. But no, seriously. Chile, the Czech Republic, I think next week we find out.
Are you going to have an international incident? Is that what you think is going to come on?
I don't know.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because it's become a far more intimate show.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the DEA is kind of out of play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they'd be able to track him down.
Are they going
to
be out of play? Because they're going to know two of their guys are gone.
Yeah.
They're missing.
I honestly cannot make a solid prediction for next week. This week's episode kind of like put the kibosh on any plans that I had for what was going to happen.
I'm going to say
Vince is good at doing.
I'm going to say the perfect storm is going to happen next episode where we see DEA come in. We see Czech Republic, we see Chile. They try to hit Walt. He gets away some kind of way, and then in the end, it's him and Jesse. That's what I say.
All right,
I'm going to stick to
guys,
the idea.
Remember
that
the ricin.
The ricin is going to be used on Lydia. That's what I was going to say. I think Lydia is going to get the ricin.
I wouldn't be happy. That wouldn't be satisfying. Yeah,
I'd love Lydia to get hit by ricin.
And while we were talking, I realized that's why Todd wants to cook, because he's not going to leave Lydia stranded, and he's in love with her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we get out of here, let everybody know where they can find you, Twitter handles, whatever you want.
Charles E. Baker.
There you go.
Twitter handle. All right. That's the best place to find.
Okay, and also on Blacklist and
on the Blacklist.
There you go.
And also, we will be covering the Blacklist here on AfterBuzz TV after it airs. So the show, 10 o'clock Mondays, right after The Voice, and afterwards, catch us.
Thank you very much, Phil. All right, Kristen.
I'm at Cinematic Escape on Twitter, or you can bing my blog, Cinematic Escape.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. You can also find me here on AfterBuzz TV on The Low Winter Sun, Under the Dome, Sons of Anarchy, and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after shows.
Man, that's a lot. You can just find me at Ed Bowling, at Bowling Like a Bowling Ball, on Twitter.
Yeah, you can't find me anywhere, but do write in. Go to AfterBuzzTV.com, go to YouTube, go to iTunes, and let us know your comments and your thoughts and your theories about what's going to happen in the next two episodes of Breaking Bad, and we'll see you next time.
All right.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.